opinions expressed on this podcast are that of your very disheveled hosts, and they represent no other individual, organisation or entity. We are back, and just barely.
Only just, yeah. Like I say, we had a few technical problems with your computer, so we are coming from by my computer and Roger's phone, so we do apologise if the audio is slightly off what it usually is, but I still think we can produce a decent podcast.
And the podcast you are listening to is Adam and Roger Break the News, where myself and our friend Adam here talk every week about what's going on in the news, and we always start by talking about our lives a little bit, and I really think we should this week for a while, because unfortunately there wasn't a podcast last week. You've had quite a lot going on, haven't you?
Yeah, so my dad basically fainted at the wheel. It's because it's partly my fault, because I told him there was some blood in his eye, and then he looked, and then and then he just felt all dizzy, and then he passed out whilst we were driving. So yeah, that wasn't great, and it's terrible because obviously now his car's written off, but it could have been a lot worse. Could have gone straight into a building, but I managed to steer it away from that, which I don't know if I'd have survived that or not. Obviously, he's not driving now. The insurance paid him out. Yeah, that's not great. Obviously, he's having to use public transport, walk or cycle, like you were before you learnt to drive.
So we can see that that is a perfectly good reason why we did not do a podcast last week. You needed time to recover from that.
Yes, I did, and I was at my mum's longer. I didn't have time to get things ready anyway when I came back later. And yeah, I wanted to relax a bit as well. So that's the reason why we didn't do the podcast last week. And also once that my dad was also getting through to his insurance and everything when he came back, so obviously I had my tea later as well, so what just wouldn't have been enough time anyway. And it's not been a great week for me either, because I left my bus pass on a bus, so I've had to order a new one by a weekly ticket. So everything seems to be going wrong this week, and the buses haven't been great either, and now we've just had the microphone issue. Hopefully I hope for a better week this week. And I know I didn't do a parkrun last week because obviously it happened whilst we were heading to a parkrun, so I never actually got to the parkrun. I was going to do Lister last week, but obviously I didn't end up doing it in the end. And then I did Horton today, which I can jog down from my house anywhere. We both jogged down, so I got 20:10 on that, so it wasn't the best of times, but I came first as usual at Horton. I usually come first, although a few weeks ago I think it was about 5 or 6, but generally I do come first at Horton, don't I?
And I think you've done really well to get in first, but as usual I think you're a bit harsh on yourself.
Yeah, but like I say, obviously, yeah, I've had a busy week and quite a terrible week as well.
Well, I can tell just from listening to you, you know, Adam, you are still a little bit wound up. My week has been okay. Like I said, nothing too dramatic has gone on, just a lot of stuff at work keeping me busy and stressed out. No, nothing too particular, though, just things in the usual world of child protection. They say bad things happen in threes, so hopefully the only way is up from here on in, and we are doing a podcast tonight. And another piece of good news about the podcast is I checked our figures on Red Circle, and for some reason today we've clocked up over 40 downloads in one day. I have no idea where that's come from or who that is, but if you are new listening to our podcast, hello. Thank you and welcome. If you are a new listener to our podcast, introduce yourself. We'd love to turn this into a little bit of a community. Email us at breakthenewspod@gmail.com.
Yes, please do. And it's been a busy old 2 weeks of news. I've got the articles from this week, one from this week and two from the previous week. I could have had many more from both weeks, actually.
And today is the 2nd of March, 2024.
Been busy news weeks from both news weeks. I think you've got all yours from this week anyway. So would you like to start off with your leading story then, Roger?
The lead story at the moment today does seem to be very much what's happening in Gaza. In fact, we've got a couple of articles relating to Gaza this week, haven't we, Adam?
Yes.
And the one that I'm sharing is that today, the United States conducted its first aid airdrop for Gaza, delivering over 30,000 meals via military planes in collaboration with the Royal Jordanian Air Force. This operation follows President Biden's pledge to increase aid after a tragic incident where 112 people died during a rush on an aid convoy. The US aims to augment aid delivery into Gaza, acknowledging the severity of the humanitarian crisis. The use of airdrops underscores the challenges of delivering aid by road. The incident sparked controversy, with Hamas accusing Israel of firing on civilians, while Israel claimed most deaths resulted from a crush after warning shots. Aid agencies criticised airdrops as inefficient. The US warns of an imminent famine in northern Gaza, which has received little aid. Israel launched a military campaign against Hamas following deadly attacks. Gaza's health ministry reports thousands have been killed or injured since then. What do you think this means with these airdrops happening, Adam?
So is this airdrops going on at Israel or is it going into Palestine?
Into Palestine. The US have sent in military planes to drop aid in.
Yes, so they're basically rescuing Palestinians by the sounds of this then.
Yes, which is a fair thing to do, I think, because they have had the hell shelled out of them by Israel. But I think this is highly concerning because it means we have American military aircraft flying above Gaza. And the minute one of those American aircrafts get attacked, it's going to escalate this war big time. This is a very worrying development.
Well, that's true. They could potentially be attacked either by accident or deliberately, but I think if they're rescuing the Palestinians, most of the world is actually pro-Palestine rather than pro-Israel, isn't it?
I don't know. It certainly feels that way here in Bradford.
Well, that's true, but there's plenty of other Middle Eastern countries who are pro-Palestine. I think there's plenty of African countries who are also pro-Palestine. So from what I can see, much of the world seems to be pro-Palestine, and very, very few people other than Western countries have actually been dared to stand up to Israel, which they're now backing away from very, very quickly. They're now more concerned about the casualties which are increasing in Palestine.
As I've said before on this podcast, Adam, I find it incredibly hard to take any side in this war. I think both have behaved badly, and a ceasefire should be the only solution anyone's working towards.
So are you kind of like agreeing with what George Galloway is saying over a ceasefire then?
I certainly think the fighting needs to stop. So yeah. I wouldn't disagree with a ceasefire now.
Fair enough.
But I'm very keen not to take a side on this. I think it's far too complicated and nuanced to take a side.
Yeah, and if you do take a side, especially if it's a pro-Israel side, you will be in a lot of trouble in this country.
To be honest, this is such a sensitive issue. Even being neutral and not taking a side is probably going to cause you problems. I think it's a very difficult and sensitive subject, which is why I'm very careful here on the podcast and try to broadcast very responsibly about it.
Yeah, because if the podcast did take off, we could end up getting into a lot of trouble.
I think asking for peace is definitely not something that could ever get anyone into trouble.
No.
And these airdrops, I'm trying to figure out if it is a good or a bad move. So, to be honest, I'm more inclined to agree with the aid agencies that are down there already who want their vans to have access instead of dropping things in by air, because dropping by air is inefficient and it increases the chance of an escalation in this war. But maybe there are powers that be who want this war to escalate and want us in a perpetual state of war.
It's not just Palestinians that need aid. There's plenty of hunger that goes on in Africa, and there's also plenty of people that need aid in Ukraine as well. It seems like this while it's now becoming much more central focus, isn't it, compared to other issues in the world?
Well, I think this is where the situation is changing the most, and it's what a lot of people care about.
Yes, and I think this is going to have big implications politically in the UK as well, as we have seen this week. So I'm now going to talk about how the speakers handled the Gaza vote, which happened not this week but the previous week. But it just shows just exactly what's going on in the country. So Prime Minister Rishi Sunak expressed concern over Commons Speaker Sir Lindsay Hoyle's decision to deviate from convention during a debate on the Gaza conflict. Sir Lindsay apologised for allowing MPs to vote on a Labour amendment during an SNP debate on Gaza, citing safety concerns. The SNP is calling for a vote on Sir Lindsay's future, while Sunak emphasised the importance of maintaining parliamentary norms. Despite pressure, Sir Lindsay has not been backed by the Prime Minister for replacement. The situation has led to accusations of playing party politics and intensified calls for his resignation. However, some MPs have defended Sir Lindsay, citing his commitment to MPs' safety. The controversy surrounding the Speaker's actions has stirred debate within Parliament, with various parties expressing their stances on the matter. What did you think about this when this news broke the other week?
It rather surprised me that Sir Lindsay was being a little bit of a naughty boy, because up till now I've always thought he was quite a good speaker. He's certainly more measured and calm and seemed to have more integrity than John Bercow, but he's messed up this week. And
well, the week before, but I think he's messed up because he's concerned about the MP's own safety, not his safety, but the Labour MPs who represent large Muslim voters in the constituency. He's concerned for their welfare, so I think that's the reason why he did this.
But as a speaker, his job is to stay neutral, and it's a shame he's not followed the procedures there.
I agree.
And so it is a blemish on his record. I can understand why people are calling for his resignation, and I think he does need a slap on the wrist for it, but hopefully the lessons are learned. He has apologised. Maybe we can forgive, forget and move on.
Fingers crossed. But like I say, obviously he is a Labour speaker, so if his Labour friends are going to be getting threatened, he's probably standing up to them, which just shows the bias within our Parliament.
And there does seem to be a bias there, and I wonder if that comes not just from the Labour Party but from the civil service as well.
Possibly. We have mentioned about them. A lot of the civil servants are left-wing as well, but I don't think that necessarily is the issue in this conflict. I think, obviously, like I said, the death threats are having a bigger issue, which is why Rishi Sunak, of course, did a big speech yesterday.
It was quite a surprising speech last night at about 6 o'clock, half
yeah,
five?
Yeah, between half five and six last night, yeah.
So Rishi Sunak came on outside Downing Street and warned against extremist efforts to undermine the country's multi-faith democracy, labelling Islamists and the far right of two sides of the same extremist coin. Sunak expressed concern over protests related to the Israel-Gaza conflict, emphasising the need for unity and condemning divisive behaviour. He pledged support for the police, announced plans for a new framework to address extremism, and vowed to reinforce the anti-terrorism prevent programme. This comes amid heightened political tensions in the UK, with recent incidents targeting politicians and divisions over the Israel-Gaza conflict. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I think he was right to make a speech. It shows just how concerned the Prime Minister is. But I thought what was more concerning is the fact that he had to also go and mention the other side so that he didn't come across as Islamophobic. He had to mention about the far right there. Now, what have we actually seen from the far right recently? Just that one-off march of football hooligans who caused a bit of trouble outside a pub or whatever. Other than that, we've barely seen much issue of the far right. I feel like he's only just mentioned that just so that he's not seen as being Islamophobic.
Understandable. And I think this speech is the right kind of rhetoric to make, because we do want people to be less extreme and more empathetic and look at each other's point of view. That's what we've always said on this podcast. But I think Sunak has said this way, way, way too late. People are already agitated.
And he's also been very weak in saying it by putting the blame on the far right for things as well. The far right have barely caused any problems recently.
But you see, he's suddenly coming out and making speeches about it because he's papping himself, because it's actually going to affect him now, because Rishi is supremely selfish.
Well, why is it going to affect him? Because it's, well, I guess it would have been affecting him for a while, but I think he is starting to worry about it now, just how much of a threat MPs are getting.
He's figuring out how unpopular he is, how hated he is. The Rochdale by-election and all the by-elections, it's generally been an absolute trouncing for him and his party. People are really, really unhappy. People are feeling very, very extremely. And it is on both sides. Maybe one side is more vocal than the other at the moment, Adam, as you say. But he's right to be concerned. He's right to try and give the police more power, but he won't, because he's useless and can't actually really achieve anything. He hasn't got enough time in office to achieve anything. He would have been better off announcing an election.
Well, that's true. He might have been better off announcing an election, but if he does announce an election, he's not exactly going to get re-elected again, is he?
No, and he knows it. That's why I say he's supremely selfish.
But I don't think this is necessarily a massive political move because he's now going to be very unpopular with the Muslims in this country.
As I said in my predictions, Adam, I don't think Rishi will be spending much time in the UK once he's out of power. I don't think he really cares. And to be honest, I'll be glad to see the back of them. And this doesn't feel like a democratic government at the moment, because we haven't voted for any of these people.
Well, that's true, we haven't.
Well, you have. You're a member of the Conservative Party, but that's still very few.
Yeah, and even so, the second vote, where after Liz Truss, the members didn't actually get a vote on the second time.
So people have really had enough, and Rishi's bricking himself about a summer of discontent, and he is right to.
I think he's probably more worried about the general election more than anything, and I think even Keir Starmer should be worried as well, because George Galloway secures a significant victory in the Rochdale by-election, capitalising on Gaza war sentiments. Galloway, representing the Workers' Party of Britain, triumphed with 12,335 votes, highlighting Labour's withdrawal of support for Azhar Ali over alleged anti-Semitic marks. Galloway's win underscores dissatisfaction with mainstream parties. He pledges to challenge Labour's dominance, particularly in areas with high Muslim populations. Despite controversy, Galloway remains steadfast on his Middle East advocacy. Additionally, independent candidate Dave Tully, not sure if you've heard of him with you being from Rochdale, impresses by securing second place. Now, I don't think anyone expected that, so it must be well known within the community in Rochdale. While Galloway's victory signals a shift, its broader electoral impact remains uncertain. Now, were you surprised about this landslide win for George Galloway? The bookies actually had Labour's marginal favourites the evening before.
I thought Galloway would win, but I didn't think it would be this much of a landslide. Every time there seems to be one of these by-elections, we seem to underestimate just how peed off people are.
Well, yeah, I predicted that Yeah, Galloway would win it and probably quite big. What I did underestimate, though, was the significant drop of Labour voters, because the Labour Party actually finished fourth in Rochdale, and that were actually behind the Conservatives, who finished third. So the favourite, it finished fourth. Now, did that surprise you, the Labour Party finishing fourth?
That did surprise me, yes, because I thought there were quite a lot of steadfast Labour voters in Rochdale, and maybe they are, but maybe it was like the previous by-election. Those regular voters just didn't bother turning out.
Or maybe a lot of those regular voters went over to Galloway.
They might have, and I do believe that Galloway will represent the people who have voted for him. Unfortunately, I don't think that his vote is really going to be about Rochdale, and a town in need of a lot of attention is probably not going to get it, especially if Galloway's record in Bradford is anything to go by.
Yeah, but even looking at this by-election, although the Conservatives got more votes than Labour, the Conservative vote share actually fell from 14,807 to 3,731. But obviously, I know the turnout fell an awful lot as well, but there were a lot more parties standing. The Independent didn't stand before, but David Tully, he managed to take 6,638 votes, which no one expected at all. And he was a local businessman.
And again, I think this is people saying to the established politicians, we've had enough of you. We'd rather have anybody but you.
So they're basically saying they'd rather have independent candidates. So,
and that's good news for a lot of the independent candidates who are hoping to stand in Bradford in our upcoming local elections.
I may not agree with the causes that they're standing for, but I do think that quite a lot of them will get elected, actually. Do you?
I definitely agree with that, Adam. It's going to be a very interesting set of local elections coming up, which will give us a good idea of how the general might go.
But the thing about it, do you think the Conservatives will make any gains in Bradford if a lot of the Labour voters go to these independent candidates?
No, not a chance. The Conservatives are going to get spanked. They're going to get wiped out. I'm going back to my position on that now.
Because Labour's votes from 2019 actually fell from 24,475 to just 2,402. So are Labour going to get spanked in Bradford as well if it's all the Muslims that are voting Labour?
I kind of hope so, for reasons that I'll go into in the next article. But before we do move on, I do want to talk about Keir Starmer's excuse making, because he did make a bit of an excuse after this Rochdale by-election. He said, well, our candidate was delisted. If Labour had actually fielded a candidate, we would have won. I'm not so sure about that, because I remember that George Galloway did beat Labour in Bradford. Labour can be beaten by George Galloway.
I'm not so sure about that either, and I want to mention the reasons why I'm not so sure about that, because I campaigned hard in Queensborough. It's not necessarily about the person. People vote based on the party they're going to vote anywhere, so I'm not sure that if Labour were campaigning for the candidate, I'm not sure he would have won.
To be honest, here in Bradford, I would be glad to see our Labour council get a bit of a pasting. I certainly think they need it, the state our city's in at the moment.
And I think they will do.
Because apparently Bradford has been saved this week, according to the article in the Telegraph and Argus. The council is very happy because they have avoided bankruptcy after the UK government agreed to provide a £220 million financial support package, allowing the council to borrow, keyword there, borrow money and use funds from asset sales to address its budget deficit. So they will still be going ahead with selling things like Ingleborough Hall. This support enables the council to avoid drastic cuts to services and maintain decision-making authority locally. However, the council still needs to implement significant cost-saving measures and sell assets to repay the borrowed funds. Council leader Susan Hinchcliffe emphasised that the support is a loan that must be repaid with interest and that further cuts are necessary to ensure financial stability in the future. But of course she won't give a toss because she'll be living it up in the sun long before then, won't she?
Yeah.
The council will need to find approximately £35 million in savings each year for the next 5 years. Despite the relief provided by the government support, difficult decisions regarding budget cuts are still required, with proposals including the closure of certain facilities. Nonetheless, the announcement is seen as positive news, allowing the council to continue its services and pursue improvements in the face of ongoing challenges. What do you think?
This is a mistake because the council are not going to find those cuts. The government know that they're going to. This is going to make Bradford even worse. Bradford's going to get even worse, and they're going to end up having to cut everything eventually. By the sounds of it, especially if the government doesn't support them.
I think next year in Bradford, the 2025 culture year, is going to be absolutely brilliant because all the resource and money is going to be poured into that. Anyone with a brain would get the hell out of here. I wish I could. If my wife would let me, I would. I'm really, really worried about Bradford now, especially with this, especially knowing that more cuts are going to be coming. I'm absolutely baffled that Susan Hinchcliffe and her cronies have been given another pass. I would have honestly preferred the bankruptcy because at least then these people would have been held accountable. But yeah. They've got away with it again.
But they might not be held accountable this year, but I don't think, although it's still not going to lead to Labour Council losing control, I don't think a lot of the Labour councillors that were voted in 2021, when we last had these elections, I don't think a lot of them will be re-elected this year because of the Gaza conflict.
Good. I want them gone. I want them to lose their seats. Not because of Gaza, but because of what a terrible job they've done in Bradford. I'm starting to think maybe anyone would be better than this current shower of shambles we have.
Yeah.
I'm really, really annoyed at them.
And do you think they'll lose the seats this year?
I hope they get an absolute pacing. I don't think they will. I think most of Bradford will still stay solid Labour.
But solid Labour? So you think Labour will win big in the seats still?
They'll win overall, but they won't win as comfortably as they usually do. And hopefully, I've got to hope, that will be the warning that they need. And that the other councillors who do get in are able to hold them accountable and manage our city's finances better. Otherwise, we are in a lot of trouble.
Do you think places like Wycol stays Labour, or do you think Conservatives will get in there again because they won in 2021, and then if Labour's vote falls a bit, maybe they might win this year?
The Conservatives aren't getting in anywhere near Bradford.
Well, they still still held Bingley Rural last year and Worth Valley and a few other seats, so. Do you think they'll hold on to those ones that they've already got?
Nope. I think they're getting wiped out. I wish you the best of luck, Adam. And I really, really, really hope you can get a win. But I will be astonished if many or any Conservative councillors get in anywhere near Bradford.
What makes you think that you'd be astonished if any Conservative councillors got in anywhere near Bradford? Because when I was out campaigning, what I found is that it was the white British community that were supportive of me, but the Asian community were all Labour. So that shows that if a lot of Labour voters go to other parties, then the Conservatives could potentially win.
I say this because every time our theories that, oh, maybe the Conservatives have a chance start to come, we then get disproven and they get absolutely pasted.
Well, that is true. But you still thought Labour would get a lot of votes in Rochdale, and that did come as a big shock, didn't it, to you?
Yeah, I was wrong about that. I could be wrong about the Conservatives, but I don't see much evidence on the contrary.
Fair enough.
You know me, Adam, though. I am always willing to come here on the podcast and say, oh, I was wrong.
Fair enough. Yeah, that is very true. And we'll just have to wait and see. A lot could change. Like I say, we've still got exactly a couple of months before polling day. So a lot could change in those couple of months.
It's still possible, maybe, that a general election could happen, but I'm still sticking with my prediction that we'll see it in summertime, maybe even July.
Yeah, and if a general election were to happen on the 2nd of May, along with these local elections, do you think that would benefit Labour more, or the Conservatives more, or Independents more?
The sooner the better for Labour, I think, because people are getting more and more annoyed and extreme. That's why Rishi's quaking in his boots.
So are you just hoping for a Labour government as soon as possible, then?
I don't know what I'm hoping for, to be honest.
Because you see what Labour are like anyway. You see, like, the Labour candidate in Rochdale, he were quite extreme.
Can't we just roll the dice and pick random people and see how that goes?
Yeah, the two main parties, their candidates, are both not very good, are they?
No.
So where do we go from here if we've got no good candidates that are going to get in?
Well, I hope that the Conservative Party can reform themselves, or maybe reform is the party to go for.
Yeah, and in Rochdale, reform didn't do very well. I know they got 1,968 votes, but in 2019, the Brexit Party, I know they were a different party, but they changed the name to Reform, they actually got 3,867 votes, so they actually lost votes in Rochdale, did Reform.
Overall, I know Reform got more votes in other by-elections in that last by-election we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Could go either way for Reform, I think.
Yes, like I said, this is just one by-election. The other two proved different results, so maybe different seats might be different, so who knows? We'll just have to wait and see with that. And like I say, I think they put the efforts into the other two seats. I don't think they had as much time to focus on Rochdale, so I think that's why Reform didn't do quite as well here.
You could be right there, Adam, and you can't read too much into one by-election in one constituency.
Yeah. And you can't put all your effort into every seat. It's just impossible. Like I say, a small party doesn't have enough funding to do that anywhere.
As a lot of the losers keep telling us.
Yeah. So we'll just have to wait and see with where Reform actually goes, see whether it does do better than the Brexit Party or not. One thing that has been revealed a couple of weeks ago is that many of the mainstream media have said immigration's good for the economy and that it fills vacancies. Well, a report actually highlights opposite of that, which shows that UK taxpayers have spent nearly £24 billion on unemployed legal migrants since 2020. So this is legal, not illegal. This figure could rise to £36 billion if international students, usually excluded from economic inactivity statistics, were included. Concerns are growing that the UK's open migration policy is being exploited for benefits tourism, with migrants arriving and accessing various welfare benefits without contributing to the economy. These findings challenge claims that mass migration is vital for economic growth. The cost calculations excluding its students amount to £23.74 billion, while including students brings the total to £35.84 billion. Tory MPs have reacted strongly, criticising the financial burden and advocating for stricter immigration controls to ensure migrants contribute positively to the economy. Now, does this surprise you that migrants are costing the UK economy?
Not particularly. and we could see it as an investment that will hopefully pay for itself. That's the optimistic way of looking at it, but it could be a problem as well. Personally, I have no problem with legal migration because it helps me to stay in a job.
It helps you to stay into a job. Why does it help you to stay in a job? Oh, because more children come in, or a country.
Exactly, as long as they bring their kids with them. It gives me more children to teach.
It may benefit you, may not benefit everyone else though, but yeah, it may benefit your industry. Like I say, a lot of economists have always said that legal migration is a way to fill job vacancies, and yeah, it may be a short-term fix, but then also not everyone is contributing to the economy, so then obviously it creates more jobs that need to be filled, like interpreters. It creates many new jobs, so in theory it actually puts a massive burden on the UK economy. So I think this report summed it up right. It's just never been thought through, this, and a lot of employers have looked abroad to import cheap labour, haven't they? And now I think we're really seeing the effects of this on the UK as a whole, particularly within cultural change.
Nobody's looking to the future. Everyone's in the moment. No.
Yeah.
There's hardly any long-term thinking going on. And it is very worrying. I think we'll be all right, but our children and our children's children are going to inherit a mess unless we really start sorting things out.
Yeah, and like I say, businesses have just been looking for cheap fixes, and politicians have also been looking for cheap fixes on certain industries. And I think that's why we've ended up being in this massive mess.
Really, the only thing we can do is put our opinion out there. And I know the way you and I do it is with this podcast. But I am beginning to wonder, you know, Rishi is clearly terrified of protests and people making their voices heard. So maybe that's what they need a dose of.
It seems like Rishi may have noticed it a little bit late. I know he's already sacked Suella from the cabinet and already suspended Lee Anderson from the Conservative Party. So it appears that they found out about it a little late, doesn't it?
Very late. But we've been harping on about it for the best part of 2 years.
Yes. So, yeah, it just seems like his head's not on the job as Rich's, is it? It's more on his businesses, like the looks of things. It's not exactly the best of outlooks, but at least we did manage to break you some news today, even if it may not have been quite as good. But I think we did get a decent podcast. Obviously, there might be a bit of an editing job at the end. But other than that, thank you everyone for listening. Is there anything else that you want to say before we close today, Roger?
Just that next week, I think I'm going to make an effort to try and find some good news, because it is all looking a bit stark at the moment this week, Adam. You're right. If you have some news to share, or that you'd like me and Adam to discuss, then what you need to do is email us at breakthenewspod@gmail.com. And if you are a new listener, thank you so much for listening. And I just want to wish you all the best, Adam, and to ask you to keep on taking care of yourself.
I will do my best, Roger, and you too. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And also be sure to email us at breakthenewspod@gmail.com. And also, I would just like to quickly mention that be sure to share with your family and friends. We'd love to grow this thing. I know we've had more downloads this week. Yes, I'm sure we're going to continue doing this as and when we can. I'm very busy. I worked out that next week I've booked 43 hours in total of work. That's based on my normal shifts and my overtime, but that's not including breaks. So yeah, I've booked a very, very long week next week.
Well, I am looking forward to seeing you in person for our next record, Adam. Right now, I think we're just taking it week by week, aren't we?
Definitely, yes, and I'm very, very busy at the moment, so we'll just have to see where it goes. And I'm also doing trying to get in other things at the same time as well, so yeah, I'll just have to see what I've got time for.
Completely understandable. Yep. Take care out there, everyone.
Yeah, take care, and I'm going to get off and get some sleep now, so thank you, Roger. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Fight the power.